football on off the ball.
Yeah, I think we needed a big statement home win like that, and I think it was convincing to go. It's never happened in my whole career that I've conceded after 8 seconds. I can't believe we conceded after 8 seconds.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Power Rankings on Off the Ball with Harvey Norman, official stats sponsor of the GAA.
Yeah, it's Tuesday. It's football power rankings time. Power Rankings on Off the Ball with Harvey Norman, official stats sponsor of the GAA. Football every Tuesday here and hurling every Wednesday with Will O'Callaghan. Matthew Brennan is with us, as he always is with the football. Still in pig and shit mode after Westmead's win well over a week ago now.
Yeah.
Still feeling good?
Ah, amazing. I cannot wait for Sunday.
I wasn't here for the power rankings last week. Did they go up enough for your...
Well, Tommy actually made the trip up and was here in person with us. And no, it was great. It was great. I really enjoyed myself anyway. And I think Tommy kind of came to terms with the match itself. I think it was a bit of therapy for him in one sense.
Tommy Rooney, the king of the football power rankings. How are you doing? How's the pressure? How are you feeling after 2 weeks in, heading into week three? Are you feeling the squeeze yet of the... Every county in Ireland wanted a piece of you.
Michael, how are you doing? Hello, Matthew. Matthew will learn, Mick, won't he? He'll learn. The perils. The perils of I suppose, broadcasting and the GAA power rankings. Because it can be all nice and rosy 1 week and then the rug can be pulled under you.
You have to revel in these moments, though, Tommy. You have to make the most of them when they come around.
You have to enjoy it. And you know what? You can't be too fatalistic about it either when you lose. And I actually think the weekend, seeing Down take down Donegal and Mayo crash out, the fact that 3 out of 4 All-Ireland semi-finalists from 2025 have fallen at the first hurdle in the provincial championships, I think it just shows that football is back, that the provincial championships are important, but I'm not quite sure it means that the provincial championships are totally back as well. The year isn't over for the teams in the losers group, and we are going to get some sensational round one qualifier draws once that draw is made. I actually think the draw is going to be made next week, lads, just to flag that with you. The Tailteann Cup draw was made on Monday, and it was kind of announced at late notice. It was on GAA Plus on Monday. And I actually think that they're bringing out the round one qualifier draw before the provincial finals to give teams a bit of a heads up. And a bit of time to prep as well. So we'll get some spicy draws in the next few weeks.
Yeah. Tailteann Cup draw might have some interest for page 4 of our power rankings this week. No changes, obviously, Tommy, because all of these teams were already done,
there
except for one or two. Is there changes?
Yeah, there's a couple of changes, Michael. Yeah, there
I've
is. And I didn't actually answer your question about the pressure heating up in terms of power rankings. It is a little bit, and we'll see it as the weeks go on as well.
I've no
getting
arrows.
A little bit of heat.
So that's
well,
why...
I can give it to you.
Yeah, go on, I presume are down, are they?
No, Tip have stayed where they are in 30th position in the country. Antrim have slid down to 29th. Fermanagh have slid down to 28th, despite a late scoring burst that we might come back to later against Armagh. Leitrim have actually moved up 2 places. Similar to Wicklow last week, they moved up despite defeat. So I don't know, have we got the right graphics in front of us at the minute, do we?
I'm not sure. This is what we got from you, I believe. So maybe you gave us the wrong slide 4 because they had no arrows on them. So maybe give us again there. Hit us from 25 to 33.
Okay. 33 New York, 32 Waterford, 31 London, 30 Tipperary, 29 Antrim down 1, 28 Fermanagh down 1, 27 Leitrim up 2. 26 Longford, 25 Carlow. So,
okay, there you go. Yeah, I think you might have pasted in the wrong thing to us when you sent them to us earlier, which is fine because the only gripe I had was you haven't given Leitrim enough credit there for their two matches. And it turns out you did. So what are we going to do? Yeah. Leitrim up to above both Antrim and Fermanagh. Again, despite Fermanagh kind of showing a decent second half in a game that was really already over. I think we can all, already over in a kind of a... In the biblical sense.
Yeah. The only thing that jumped out, obviously we might touch on it later on when we do get to talking about Armagh a little bit more, but Darren McGurn scoring is 112 in the second half is pretty ridiculous. Or 112 overall in the game, obviously, but the second half performance in particular was quite astonishing. He's obviously had a lot of issues with his injuries and all that, and he's a probably notable figure from a not so big county with the stuff he does online and all that sort of thing. But he did say after the game that he felt as though Armagh gave him space that he would not get in the Tailteann Cup. Now, I don't think Kieran McGeaney would appreciate that. I don't think Kieran McGeaney will be... I can imagine him going to his players and saying, listen to that, like, that's ridiculous. But at the same time, the game was well and truly over by halftime. So it's hard to read into, to know what exactly to read into a situation like that.
It's one of those performances, Tommy.
Yeah, he let the shackles off, and I actually noticed his Instagram post last night. He obviously works in and around S&C and performance, and, you know, is very open online. You get a great insight into Dara's life as an intercounty footballer if you follow him. And he said on a personal note, he spoke about it being a really tough day, not the performance we expected in that first half, really hard one to accept as a team. Massive lessons learned against the top team. Always proud to represent my county and give everything I can. But on a personal note, I felt the level of freedom out there that I haven't experienced at county level before, which is a reminder of what's there when you let yourself just play with the shackles off. And I think that's actually a really important message. Dara's obviously a coach, and I know he works with a lot of young footballers around the country at club and county level. But to play with the shackles off, and it gives a glimpse into, look, it's not really a theory, but I was asking the question on the pod during the week, why are two Division 4 teams getting really close to Division 1 teams in Wicklow and Leitrim, nearly taking down Galway and Dublin? Why are two Division 3 teams good enough to take down two All-Ireland semi-finalists last year, Westmeath and Down against Meath and Donegal? And I'm looking against Clare against Kerry. You know, they're within a score for a good bit of the game. They were ahead of times in the first half. I actually didn't think Clare let the shackles off enough. I didn't think they went for it enough. I think in this new game, if you're ruthless, if you play with a bit of abandon, if you play with a bit of risk, you'll be rewarded. Look, at Fermanagh, we're never going to be good enough to concede a 232 against Armagh. But McGurn actually letting the shackles off and racking up 112 out of 124. It just shows you that the chance is there to take chances in this game of Gaelic football.
You make an interesting point that we weren't going to go into. When Conor Myler was in a few weeks ago on Off the Ball Breakfast, I was asking him if I felt that the game, the Armagh-Tyrone game, was played at a slower pace and a more take your shots and build up for the chance. And it felt a little bit more like the game from a few years ago. And it does feel like there's such a natural defensive mindedness in Gaelic football that's been built up over like, yeah, three decades at this stage, that even though there was this sort of like madness of, oh, there's only 12 men in there instead of 15, let's go mad, that defences were going to be able to figure that out, and possession is still so important and teams are holding back. Now the score lines are still higher, but obviously one of the shots that you can take is double the points it used to be, so be interesting to see what the actual score breakdown is. It's still, of course, it's higher. There is,
it's
more
trending upwards.
There is more room in there, but it does feel like the game, and watching Donegal, I think, doing this a lot during the week, and that Down didn't do it, but Donegal just biding their time. And I don't know if the top teams are playing with shackles off enough, actually, considering the space that's in there and the opportunity that is there to go and say, do you know what, we'll have another chance again in a minute. Let's just go and see what we can do here, as opposed to just spending 6 minutes setting up one shot.
Can I jump in there?
Oh, yeah. James O'Donoghue. Yeah.
Sorry. James O'Donoghue uses Westmead's attack as the template for what he wants to see. And I think we were talking about this. The top teams all attack the same way, still with control, still with a serious level of coaching that I don't think you need as much of it in this game. I think you need a bit more street football, a bit more off the cuff. James talks about the freedom of the Westmeath attack, and you weren't really sure what you were going to see. You know, he's always talking about towny forwards, fellas that, you know, maybe a bit of flair about them, that you're not really sure what way they're going to go. They're maybe playing 1-2s or going around the corner. Screening, we're not going to get into it in the power rankings here. It's a topic of conversation that I've been discussing for the last couple of weeks and definitely at the weekend. The screening happens a lot nowadays, because it's a way to free up a little bit of space on a very slow attack if somebody's being man-marked. I think it's borderline at times. Sometimes it's done really well and subtly. But like, a lot of the top teams are attacking with screens and slowing it down and trying to get an overload on one side and free up a two-point shooter on the other side. You mentioned Down there. Down just went for the juggler.
Yeah.
Cathal O'Kane, I saw the Irish News were doing this earlier on their show. Cathal O'Kane had a graphic. 21 of Down's 30-odd shots were within 25 metres of the goal. Like, they were inside 21 metres. They broke the line. They ran hard. They cut through Donegal. They opened them up. They weren't afraid to go at them. And you mentioned Donegal. They're a bit more pedestrian than usual. And I actually think playing with that risk, that bit of freedom that Westmeath maybe did, is giving you a bit of a chance.
I'll give you an example that it shows you how common it is that it wasn't really overly commented on. But I could tell you, I've never been tearing my hair out as much as in, who did Dublin play in the last round of the league? When they got relegated, whoever it was anyway,
Galway.
Right?
Galway.
And they had possession at the end of the game and they needed a two-pointer to win it, I think. And but they got the ball back with like 4 minutes to go. And they went around the circle trying to create a shooting opportunity. They never created one. And eventually, I think it was Conn or someone, just a snapshot that was never going to go over, game over, you've lost. As opposed to, let's run forward as quick as we can, take a score, try and win the kick out, try and win possession back. We'll have two chances of this. There was 4 full minutes left in the game. And it was just like, this is the negativity created with this whole possession play. And also, I don't want to watch it. I'm sorry. The one thing that Gaelic football has made has been better, and they're not going to care about that, but just as a byproduct, the game has improved so much as a spectacle in the last 2 years. And if the top teams are still with this conservatism as at the core, if they want to be Arsenal, let them be Arsenal. But I don't really want to watch it, you know?
There's also, just last year, we obviously saw Down play Donegal, and the approach in that game from Down was still of the kind of old rules era, where they were trying to limit exactly what Donegal could do, as opposed to focusing on the damage that they could do to Donegal. And that was the polar opposite of the weekend, where they just ran at them with everything they had, and particularly Down straight through the middle of the pitch too. We're not trying to work around them. We're going to go through you here, and not physically through you, but if we have to, we will. And it was the hallmarks of Everton that you kind of can do in the new rules when you're an underdog going up against a team that you're not favoured to go on and beat. Quick mention for Down's goalkeeper, Ronan Burns, is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, we hear all about Charlie Smith, what he's doing. He's obviously a Down man as well, and was a goalkeeper over in the NFL and all that. This guy is amazing. I remember last year statistically was one of the best goalkeepers in the year, and he's carried in the country, and he's carried that forward into the season too.
We'll get back to Down in a minute. Let's go to slide 3, which is 17 to 30 to 24. Because not too much movement here either. Limerick are still at 24. Wicklow at 23. Sligo 22, Offaly at 21, Leash have dropped down 1 to 20, Clare move up 1 after their performance against Kerry to 19, Wexford at 18, Cavan at 17. Tommy, Clare move up 1, but I do think this is probably an opportunity for us to talk about the screening issue, because we have it as our Hawkeye moment of the week, which is the close call that is getting the country talking about, right? So, like, is screening something that is gamesmanship? Is it illegal? Is it legal? And is this what happens when you bring in a renowned basketball man as your coach?
Well, it's not just a basketball thing, you'd say. It's not just a Kieran Donaghy thing. Screening has been happening for a long time in Gaelic football. Okay, maybe it is a basketball thing. I think back to the Dubs and how good they were doing it when they had Mark Ingle and Jason Sherlock in charge. Yeah. I tried to broach this with Paddy Anders and James on the pod, and the two lads ambushed me. They weren't having it. They started acting like it was nothing. There's nothing going on here. They battened down the hatches. The thing about screening is, when it's done properly, okay, in a basketball sense, and this is, we're not playing basketball here, but you can obviously bring in these principles. When it's done subtly, there's a bit of an art to it. There's a bit of a getting your body in the way, delaying it until the last minute, where you actually physically can't vanish as the player in possession. You delay your hand pass, you slip it to your forward off the shoulder, and your body just happens to be in the way of the defender to block him and give your man an inch. When it's done subtly, Kerry did it subtly at times. Other teams did it subtly. Roscommon got stung for one at the weekend against Mayo. A referee actually blew the whistle. And I've heard, and I've said this a couple of times in the last few days, I've heard it from a couple of different sources, the referees are looking at this and they're talking about it, and it's become a bigger thing in the last couple of weeks and months. It's not a new thing. Nobody's saying it's a new thing, but it's becoming much more obvious because a lot of the top teams are attacking with screens. There's nothing in the rules against a screen. there is something in the rules against a third man tackle.
Yeah.
Against an off the ball, you know, if you use your body to block
a defender. So if you're
moving
into it, basically, it's a free.
And
but that's an easy enough thing, I think, to referee.
Notice, yeah.
Yeah. If you're stepping into it, then you're illegal.
The only thing would be that the referee would be watching the play, I suppose, as opposed to
it's
what's going on.
Yeah, well, it usually happened about a metre away from the ball.
True enough,
you know? Well, lads, I'll tell you what the problem is. Seemingly the feeling is a black card is too punitive, a punishment for that. And that's what it would be. There's no other punishment for something like that. It's a black card or nothing. And it seems like the answer has been so far is to do nothing. Even if it's clunky, even if it's obvious. And this isn't just the Kerry thing. My phone has not stopped. Like the barrage of messages I have gotten from Kerry people on every platform over the last couple of days, thinking that I'm only raising this as a Kerry thing. It's not a Kerry thing.
The only person I talked to about that match is from Kerry, and he said it ruined the game. He said it ruined the game as a spectacle. Kerry doing it, you know, and that's fine. Like, I mean, again, the top teams are going to do it. They're going to do it better than the likes of Clare. It won't be as obvious when they're up against better teams. That's fine. Like, it's not an anti-Kerry thing by any means, but they're perfecting it at the moment because they're best team in the country. We'll find out if they are in a minute.
And I would say all the top teams do it. The other thing I'd say is there's another type of screening that happens as well. We spoke to Ian McGee about it, and it's happening in around midfield where fellas are blocking bodies, holding people off. Like, Kieran McGeaney framed it as piggery. Like, it's fine, right? But there's also injuries coming out of this as well because fellas are nailing each other completely off the ball and it's being let go.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to rear its head in provincial finals, and I actually think referees might clamp down on it if it's not done subtly. You know, and it has to be done something. Mike Breen, if you watch back Clifford's first point the last day, Ike Maguire, who had won the first three balls in on David Clifford, like, okay, he was on top at that moment. Ike Maguire was a fabulous footballer. I played against him. I don't think he's a man-marking cornerback. I've seen him do man-marking jobs before on Paddy Clifford out the field. I'm not sure he's a cornerback, but he won the first three balls in. Watch the way Mike Breen screams for that first score. It's honestly textbook stuff. Exceptional. Couldn't give a free against him. It's so subtle. Yeah. It's done brilliantly. But there's other ones in the game that are so obvious, and they're physically bumping players out of the way, you know?
I wonder, is the black card punishment an issue for it? And it comes back, there's another incident in the Clare-Kerry game where the Clare player has a momentary thing where he just brings the ball out over the sideline after a free, and it's just like the whole place goes, oh, it's like, right, 21-yard free. You know what I mean? And it was just, again, it's fine. I don't hate the rule as such. I just wonder, are we so wrapped up in rules and regulations that we can't let normal things happen? So, for example, an obvious illegal screen is a free. We don't have to call it a third man tackle. But again, everything has to be so rule book orientated. And it's like we've gone down this path where everything is like rubber stamped by Congress and the rule book is the be all and end all. And it's like becoming this kind of like, you know, this death by committee sport, both sports. Like, it's not one or the other, but like, you know, at some point it's just illegal move free. You know what I mean? It's like, if a referee can't give a free for it because he has to give a black card and he doesn't think it's worth it, then we're in gobbledygook land. Like,
I get where you're coming from, Mick, and I know you're coming from a hurling perspective there as well, where you don't want any cards or any rules or whistle.
No, but actually, that's not what I'm saying at all. Like, that's
I know it's not. But there's absolutely merit in what you're saying, but we do have a problem with the tackle in Gaelic football. And this has been something that's been raised a long time. I think it still exists. The tackle is not defined properly. And on the foul, the referee actually doesn't have any... The referee can't play God. The referee can't decide to not give a black card for a third man tackle. It doesn't make sense otherwise. So I'm not... Maybe we need to open up the rule book a little bit more, that there can be that bit more discretion. But it's too definitive at the
minute.
That's
my point.
I think the problem is...
I'm not blaming the refs for this. I'm blaming the way the game has gone. That they've, do you know what they've done? They've started to niggle at the game so often that it's basically like when Father Ted was trying to fix the car. And it's, you know what I mean? It's like you can't legislate for everything. So if you have this rule where it's like everything is a black card or everything is, and there's no doubt about it, that has to be a black card, then, you know, what happens then when suddenly screening becomes a problem, but nobody thinks it's a black card offence?
Yeah. Mm.
And then if they give a black card, they're the biggest enemies in the world, and you'll have three people on RT shaking fists about them, about how they ruined the game.
That's the other way it goes.
Do you know what I mean? It's not
their
fault either. Like.
I think there has to be a world where you can open up for a bit of discretion on the referee's behalf, where you can decide, okay, and everyone can look at it unanimously and go, that's a bit over the top.
Then they'll never give a black card.
We've made wholesale changes to the game in the last 18 months. So many that have been, you know, fabulous and have really changed things. Nothing's perfect. So I think you are right. I think this stuff can be ironed out and can change. And look at screening. I'm telling you, I'm not picking this out of the sky. It's going to rear its head over the next couple of weeks and months in the championship. It's going to become a big issue.
Did you think what David Clifford did was worthy of a black card? Because it is by the rule book. There wasn't even that much complaining. But like, again, it could have been in a bigger game. But he just is this momentary thing that's not dangerous or violent, doesn't really slow the game down, doesn't really do anything. It's a free. And he's gone because by the letter of the law, he's doing one of the things that people also do when they're trying to slow the game down or they're trying to kill momentum. Like
I never thought it wasn't a black card.
Yeah, neither did I. It was.
I didn't get too fussed about it.
Too,
I think
too
it was
big
just
a
Kerry,
punishment.
Kerry fans were probably happy that he was...
that he was coming off,
I would be very surprised if they gave a black card for that exact thing in an All-Ireland semi-final if there's a couple of points in there.
Yeah, I just hope they wouldn't.
I'm in total agreement with you. I think it would kill the game to a point. Or we'd be... Yeah, wouldn't I mean, not necessarily kill the game.
I don't know. Lads,
it'd be a bit mad,
I'm not sure,
I don't think they'd do it. I don't think they'd do it.
I'm not sure I'm fully with you on a lot of that as well, though. Teams are so smart at accidentally doing things. Players are so intelligent that accidentally being cynical or accidentally slowing an attack down. Meade were experts at it in the league and they got away with it against Cork. Cork really should have got a chance to equalise late on. I'd have been endlessly frustrated as a Cork person. Even to be looking at that and not seeing the free moved up late on for the incident at the end of that game. I don't think we want cynicism in the game.
No.
We don't want it to be non-contact. We want contact to be allowed. We want hard hits. Like Clifford, the game was over at that stage. I wouldn't have really focused too much on that one. But if it happens in an All-Ireland semi-final, it happens and deal with it.
No, but what I'm saying is would a referee turn around and make a decision like that for an incident like that in an All-Ireland semi-final?
But he
semi-final?
Should.
Yeah, I'm not debating whether he should or he shouldn't, but would he?
He should.
Okay,
fair enough. All right, let's go to page 2. Things are getting a little bit more interesting as we go from 9 to 16. I'll just read it out here. 16 is Westmeath, unchanged. Kildare at 15. Monaghan drop 1 to 14, not playing. Tyrone drop 1 to 13, not playing. And that's because Down have gone up 2 to 12. Meath are at 11. Derry drop to 9. And Cork, after a big win over Tip, go ahead of Derry. Which is an interesting call, actually, Tommy. We'll start with that just very briefly because I want to talk about Down in this segment. Cork, obviously, just it's probably they must have been very close to Derry for you anyway. I think they only passed them out last week after Derry beat Antrim. So it's just they're neck and neck anyway, I suppose. So as soon as Cork put in a kind of a decent... Cork weren't hammering Tip 3 or 4 years ago, I suppose, is probably the way to look at that, isn't it?
Listen, lads, I'm not going to get too hot and bothered about 9 to 16 on the power rankings. You're free to get upset with me or fall out with me or give out to me about them. But there's very little
between. Just trying to have a chat about Cork here.
There's very little between them all, right? I have to justify my selections, Michael. There's very little between them all. And there's a bit of flip-flopping going on. Derry hammered 7 shades of red out of Cork up in Celtic Park earlier in the league in the second half. Easy to argue that Derry are a better side than Cork. Cork are going into a Munster final against Kerry. Didn't score for 17 minutes against Tip. We're only a point up at half time. Pulled away in the second half. I think Cork are in a good position going into that game against Kerry. A Kerry team that have a savage amount of injuries. They are ravaged by injuries at the minute. And I think we'll hear a lot more about those injuries from the Kerry camp over the next little while. Jack O'Connor is saying they won't get anyone else back in the 2 weeks. I'm not sure, you know, if they will or not, but Jack says they won't. And I just think Cork are in a really good position to take them on. Derry have an Ulster semi-final this weekend, a very tight game at Monaghan, who have slid back to 14th. I would have Derry in a really strong position for that one. And they might flip into 9th position next week. Who knows? We're doing this every week, so there could be a bit of flip-flopping going on between those teams.
Yeah.
But that wasn't really the major move for me.
No, the major move was obviously Down. Now, I think them getting ahead of Tyrone and Monaghan is something that would, I suppose, be a big change in the kind of, if that stays where it is, a big change in kind of the way we look at Ulster football over the last couple of years. I might say as much about the other two. But it's funny, we were talking about this on the show last night with Owen. The idea that, like, Conor Lafferty, and we're going to make down our county story of the week here as well, because obviously it was a phenomenal win to beat the kind of All-Ireland finalists, the league champions, one of the favourites for the All-Ireland, number one on Tommy Rooney's power rankings. No, number two, sorry, actually. They were number two. They never made it to number one. But, it's incredible where they've come from. Anyone who watched their championship game against Galway last year...
What a game of football.
Like, I don't think he could be massively surprised that they were... at least a contender for this, whatever about what the RTE graphics department thought about them or not. Like, I know we kind of had Donegal penciled in, so it was probably more about Donegal than it was about Down. But at the same time, it's like, this Down team have been dangerous for a while now. But I suppose it all came together on Sunday.
Mm. Yeah, I describe them as the great entertainers of the 2025 Championship. They were just so... fun to watch, and you know, I'd have kept a close eye on the manner in which Conor Lafferty has developed this team in the last couple of years. They've been on a very similar trajectory to Westmeath and Meath in terms of winning an attaching cup and trying to build on it. Westmeath have not been quite as linear. Meath have probably jumped ahead of the queue, but Down, Michael, they've jumped up to 12 here in the power rankings. It would be an utter travesty if Down are playing Sam Maguire football this year.
Mm.
And there's a very good chance they won't be. Like, they're up against an Armagh team in the Ulster semi-final now. They're going to be up against it just a week on from taking down Donegal. And you can be sure as hell, Conor Lafferty and his backroom team, Tony McEntee was part of it this year as well. Marty Clark is on it. You know, he had Jim McGuinness involved back in 2023 on his backroom team. Conor Lafferty leaves no stone unturned. He was down in Kerry. He flew the Down boys down to Kerry last week. And Jack O'Connor doesn't play very many challenge matches in around championship games. Kerry usually play AVB games, and they brought down, and it was the Kerry A team versus the Down A team for the first 40 minutes or so. Very competitive. Oran Murdoch seemingly ripped it up that evening. And we know how good he is. Like, Down, the manner in which they took down Donegal at the weekend, I know Shane Hannon called it an off the ball on Saturday. Like, but that was a shock, lads. That was a shock. Like, the way that Donegal treat the Ulster Championship, how much stock Jim McGuinness has seemingly put into it over the years. Like, it's not year over for Donegal by any stretch. I've made that point earlier on. I think they're going to be in a better position now. But what Down have achieved there, like, absolutely county story of the week. The manner in which Lafferty has grown that team from under-20s to Tatchin Cup winners to now contenders, really, in the Ulster Championship. And, like, Mick, we would have... probably grown up on Down teams in the 90s and the legends of the Pete McGrath era, and then that 2010 team were just so exhilarating to watch, who fell short against Cork.
Yeah,
everyone loves a blockbuster Down football team because they're so entertaining.
They definitely are, and it's also like, it is the county story is being like, are Down back in some way? Like, we'll see, I suppose, over the next few weeks, but they're definitely back competitive. They are great to watch, as you say, but they're the team that made the breakthrough for Ulster teams in the 1960s. They were the super team that won All-Irelands in the 60s. They obviously had that. They were the start of the Ulster burst of the 90s. They got two All-Irelands out of that. They're a team you think about when you think of Gaelic football, even the colours.
Yeah.
And for them to be so irrelevant over the last, like, it's... you know, heading on like 15 years now or so, or even that 2010 team kind of came out of nowhere really and didn't last the course, like, you know. So
they play some smashing football, and there's some smashing footballers there too. Yeah. Like Pat Havran kicking the two pointers, Daniel Guinness, you mentioned Oran Murdoch, like there's some serious talent in there as well. And as you say, it would be a shame. I mean, I've seen quite a lot of them naturally with Westmeath over the last couple of years. The two of them have kind of been in and out of Talent Cup, floating between Division 2 and Division 3, and there's always been an air of a slight more consistency with Down, I think, than some of the other teams that were down. Or even with Meath, and Meath have kind of got consistent over the last little while, and Westmeath have been up and down, but Down seem to have that little bit more consistency about them. And it would be a shame not to see them in the Sam Maguire this year. I wonder, is there a conversation around that split and it being 16-16 between Tarleton Cup and Sam Maguire?
Do you know what, though? Things like that have to happen, and it's not the end of the world. I was hearing similar conversations about... hurling, and what good is it for Kildare to get relegated and so on. And I know down we're on an upward curve, but if it happens, it happens. Like, they'll be in it next year because they'll have the chance to finish high up in Division 2 and whatever. Now, we should mention, they have two chances of getting in. They can beat Armagh, and then also, correct me if I'm wrong here, but if Kildare beat Westmeath in the semi-final next week, Kildare obviously are in there as a Tadhg Cup spot, so that means then that Division 2 aren't, or the teams ranked lower than Down aren't taking up two spots, they're only taking up one spot, which means Down as Division 3 champions will get in.
Which
would be ranked 7th in Division 2, say.
I was just looking at the throwing times there, but yeah, you've laid it out perfectly. If Kildare win, Down are safe. If Down and Westmeath win, Cavan are in the Tadhg Cup.
I hadn't thought of that. So they're like, so, as the 6th place team in Division 2.
They'll go down to the Tadhg Cup. So just to make a point there, Kildare Westmeath throws in at 2 o'clock on Sunday in the Leinster semi-final in Tullamore. Back to the scene of Westmeath's win the last day against Meath. 4 o'clock for Armagh and Down in Clonus. So Down will know that they either are already guaranteed their place in Sam Maguire, or they need to go for broke. Now, I'm not sure that's going to change any game plans at that stage. And, you know, we've mentioned already that teams in the top tier, a lot of them attack the same way. So Down playing Kerry in a challenge game the week before Donegal would suit them down to the ground. Down beating Donegal the week before Armagh would suit them down to the ground. Obviously, personnel-wise, they've got to make changes. Armagh are a different prospect in certain ways to Donegal. But Down don't have to totally rip up the script here. Like, they don't. They're actually, a lot of the top teams attack the same way, and they can apply a lot of the same principles, I think, going into the weekend.
I agree. Last question on page 3 before we get up to the top and see what the changes are. If you had been playing for Cratlow all your life instead of transferring from Meath Hill, would you have thought of putting Down up to number 11 after what we've seen so far this season?
No, I don't know. Okay. Was that a veiled dig about transfers? But
it wasn't a dig. It was if you weren't a Meath man, Tommy, and you were just standard Clare footballer, would you have put Down ahead of Meath or considered it?
I wonder, was I too harsh on Meath? I wonder that I jumped the gun on Meath, and do you know what? I'm not going to worry about that because I think the summer will tell a tale, and I made this point during the week, yesterday, it feels like a long week. Meath will feel far better about themselves today. Mayo, Tyrone, Meath have a lot of figuring out to do over the next 3 weeks, but there's a great reset that's going to happen in the middle of May after provincial finals. The provincial finals don't actually matter as much who wins or loses them. Getting into them is a big thing because you're a first seed at home, no matter what, in round one of the qualifiers. But now you're going to be coming up against a Donegal, a Meath, a Mayo, a Tyrone, already guaranteed. Kildare, if they don't get to the provincial final, are going to be in that loser side of the draw as well. Like, you could nearly get an easier game in round one. And if you win your game in round one, you're into the winner's pot. And then it's all better off. Like, forget about the provincial championship. You're now into the All-Ireland series, and you can forget about any losses earlier in the year. The great reset is really underway.
Okay, let's go. Final page. Let's go 8-1. Lowly Dublin stay at 8th place. Loud stay in 7th. Mayo swap places with Roscommon. Roscommon go ahead of them. Galway stay in 4th. Here's the big one. Donegal have dropped the place to number 3 in the power rankings. Armagh up to number 2. Kerry remain at number 1. Tommy Rooney.
Where do you want me to go? Yeah, and like...
Armagh number 2, Donegal 3. That's where we start.
We probably had a top 2 for the majority of this year, and not many people would have differed on that. And then you would have had a chasing pack of... You could... Anything from 2 to 8, you could call them all in the same tier there, from 2 to 10 maybe. 2 to 11 even. And...
or 3 to 11.
Snake meeting.
But what I'd say is that Armagh have gotten bodies back. Is there much between Armagh and Donegal? There never has been a huge amount.
Yeah.
There's been Ulster finals in the last couple of years, penalty shootouts, last minute points after extra time. The last two All-Ireland champions are now 1 and 2 in the power rankings. And I think that probably says a lot. Donegal aren't going away. And I actually think Donegal are going to be the better for not going through Ulster. They would have came through a really tough game against Down to go into another attritional game against Armagh, and then another difficult game in an Ulster final against either a Derry or a Monaghan, then into a round one qualifier where they could have got a really tough game in round one as well. So I think Down are going to be perfectly primed here. We'll know a lot from the draw. Donegal. But we'll know a lot from the draw in round one, but I just think Donegal are going to be okay. I saw some really good stuff from Oisin Gallen at the weekend. They've things to figure out. They didn't look as fluid, as fast, as aggressive as they usually do. I don't know, was the Letterkenny thing a factor? I think internally in Donegal, maybe it was the fact that the game was in Letterkenny and not Ballybuffet. I don't know if that's that big a thing. Not a huge amount to worry about, but I just felt this move needed to be made. Armagh 2, Donegal 3.
I largely agree. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think so. I think that's fine, yeah. I still think, even after we watched the league final and Donegal obviously put on a bit of a clinic against Kerry, I still would have had Kerry considerably ahead of Donegal myself. And I think this has kind of only backed that up ever so slightly. But and in the same breath, as you mentioned about how much weight Jim McGuinness does put into Ulster, like that only being a second loss in the Ulster Championship is a crazy stat, and it does kind of put into context how much of an achievement it is for Down. I don't think they'll be panicking, as you say. They'll still have... this is by no means the end of their year, as you've said a couple of times. But it is a setback nonetheless. They would have been expecting to get through that game, you know what I mean? So they will have to go back to the drawing board ever so slightly.
One thing, and it's a thing for Mayo to think about as well, is the biggest total Donegal have conceded in Ulster Senior Football Championship this century. And I know there's two pointers at play there as well, but Down could have ran in six goals at the weekend. So
what was the defender doing where he tried to save the fist into the goal? Like that was talk McCall, about a brain fart moment, like, you know, but maybe it would have hit the crossbar, but
you know, maybe he expected someone as usual to have a flood of Donegal defenders around them, but anytime I looked at the screen, you had five or six
it was boys. They were just attacking as like a table football team, like, weren't they just coming in a line? It was I do feel like Down take more credit from that game, and possibly the mark against Donegal might have been even underrating them slightly, which is fair. Again, I think we're talking small margins here anyway, and actually I think it's worth mentioning that Armagh weren't overly impressive against Tyrone, and we weren't gone on them, but they got the job done. Yeah. And then they come out and hammered the shite out of Fermanagh. Like, I know it's Fermanagh and they're on completely different levels, but at the same time, if you're at it, you're at it. And I tuned into that match wondering would Armagh struggle a little bit, and saw the scoreline after 20 minutes and I was like, right, well, okay, well, need worry about this one.
I was just going to say that second half from Armagh, although as we've mentioned already, like it's a nothing thing. I wouldn't worry about it myself, and they were fairly ruthless in the first half. But I look at Derry,
they're playing next week, don't forget, like it's not there's no gap week, they're definitely minding their legs, like.
I know, but I'm thinking about Derry's game against Antrim, and that was ruthless from start to finish, and Armagh weren't ruthless from start to finish, and that's something we do associate with Kieran McGeaney teams, is that they don't leave any stone unturned. And it wouldn't be something I totally ignore, but I also wouldn't be putting a crazy amount of weight in. I think Galway obviously haven't moved. We can get on to the Connacht side of things now, before we wrap up. Like, they obviously haven't moved. They probably missed an opportunity there, I think, to as far as the power rankings go, to get themselves into that conversation with Armagh and Donegal.
And if anything, Roscommon are nipping at their heels now. Yeah. We should talk about that game.
Yeah,
Harvey Norman's stat of the week comes from Roscommon, because like I was here because you're trying to watch every Sunday was mad, like, right? So you're trying like the Waterford. Tipperary scored a goal like after about 25 minutes and you're like, right, I'm done with this. And I turned, but I knew Down were beating Donegal, so I watched that or whatever, and I was like, I'll come to Mayo and Roscommon later. And then Waterford started getting back into it, so Mayo Roscommon was put aside. But all I'm getting is message from, not saying it was actually nothing to do with Mayo, it was Roscommon are putting on a masterclass here of just having this game completely figured out, like.
Yeah, and it was so impressive. It was so impressive, lads. And Mick, one of my favourite things about McHale Park is where the kind of radio booth is kind of positioned at the back of the stand. And this is something we've spoken about a bit this week. It's usually like fever pitch stuff. The punters are all around you. My laptop is usually hitting off one of their heads. I've wires going in and on top of their programs. And I had the matches on. So I had the hurling on and I had the Donegal down game on beside me trying to keep on top of it. And I had Mayo and Roscommon supporters leaning over my equipment to try and see what was going on down in Porky Cueve or in Walsh Park or up in Donegal and down. But then the Mayo Roscommon game just took over. And sorry, the point I was going to make there is it wasn't as packed as usual because of the debacle around the stand tickets and the fact that kids are being charged rather than the usual €5, they put it up to a full stand ticket for £35. And a lot of people spoke with their feet there. A lot of empty seats in front of me in the stand. It added to a very strange atmosphere on the ground that day. 15,000, a lot of them over on the terrace where the sun shines in McHale Park on the far side. But not having people in the stand, it was strange. And it felt like there was a lot of Roscommon voices and bodies there. And the Rossies ate them alive off the pitch and on the field. And the stat of the week, as you mentioned, the stat's been different in a few different places. I have iGaelic coaches 110 up and I'm looking at Evan Talty's statistical breakdown of the game here. He's got some really interesting breakdowns. You'll follow him on Twitter if you want to have a look at the work that he does in that regard. Obviously involved in coaching a lot of club and county teams as well, Evan. Like, his setup has it broken down that Roscommon mind 110 from the Mayo kick out. Mayo actually, I think they were 65%, 63% on their own kick out, which isn't that bad. Like, they're two thirds they win at their own kick out. But where they lost it and when they lost it, they were punished severely. And that's the big point here. Mayo started this game relatively well. They had the wind with them. They were in control. They were ahead a couple of times. Roscommon hadn't scored after 14 minutes and they let them in. Right. And the flip side of this was the Roscommon kick out and Conor Carroll, who had a brilliant year with Bridget's, who he transferred to in the last 18 months or so. A lot of the Bridget boys hadn't really earned their way back in, or perhaps are kind of still injured from their club season just gone. So there's a lot of kind of changes in Roscommon. But Carroll eventually earns his way back from Aaron Brady, who'd been playing in the league. Conor Carroll's cousin, by the way. Aaron Brady had a very good league campaign and goals for Roscommon. Conor Carroll's performance for Roscommon at the weekend was one of the best goalkeeping performances I've seen in an awful long time. Ronan Burns was phenomenal too. But Carroll, his ability to go long over the Mayo press, to 60-yard kickouts, 65-yard kickouts into Enda Smith, led to two, like one goal, and Dermot Murtagh hitting the inside of the post. To be able to kick a ball out and get a goal chance within 10 seconds is a huge thumbs up to the Roscommon setup, and also big questions about the Mayo setup, because it happened a couple of times. But just on the Mayo kickout itself, like 1-1, they just compounded errors. Henley had a short kickout stolen after Murtagh hit the post, straight in for a goal 20 seconds later. They concede a point shortly after that. It's not just on the keeper, it's the movement out the field, it's the aggression out the field, it's the anticipation out the field of the Mayo middle third and their full back line. They conceded another 2 points later on in the first half when Mayo have the wind and allowed Roscommon to be back within 3 points at half time, when really it felt like a much bigger wind. And I'd been down on the pitch before the game. I was surprised there was any wind really at play given the day that we had. But there was this funny enough breeze in McHale Park and it reared its head in the second half. Roscommon were level within 2 minutes of the second half. They were ahead moments later. And then it felt like the game had utterly gone for Mayo and there was 48 minutes on the clock and they just served up 13 minutes from hell. Turnovers, lack of energy, misses in front of the posts, and Roscommon went from 2 points up to 10 points up. Kobe kicks a two-pointer and that kick out I mentioned, the Conor Carroll kick out over the top, straight off the back of the two-point free. Darragh Heenan puts the ball in the back of the net. The final score of this game was in the 63rd minute. There isn't a score for the final 7 minutes. Roscommon had their job done, an absolute clinic in Castlebar, and the kick out was a massive platform for it.
Not to take away from the performance of Roscommon in any way, shape or form, but on the face of it, looking at your power rankings, I would suggest that Mayo are perhaps slightly lucky to be sixth. Would you anticipate a straight swap with Mayo and whoever comes through that loud Dublin game on Saturday?
I wouldn't be getting ahead of myself, Matthew. You know, there's a lot of machines whirring in the background here to try and crunch the numbers ahead of next Tuesday. And, you know, it'd be good to say. But it's a fair point.
They're all close. If Derry go and beat Monaghan well, I think Derry are in the conversation to go up that high. Like, you know, there's no, like, I just don't think that there's... I think Matthew has a fair point. Like, Mayo haven't shown anything this year to suggest to me that they're on, like, a tier above or anything like that. I think there's a big group between four, given Galway's form at the moment, I would say, right? But let's see. Galway, I feel like we all think could be... Stretch your legs at some stage. But between four and maybe...
11.
14. 13.
Yeah,
Tyrone haven't shown it to us, right, Grant? Okay.
I wouldn't. No, and Conor Laverty is welcome to clip this and play it in the dressing room if he wants. But they're not secured of their place in SAM yet. They're just not. And
it's a fair point. That's a fair point.
I think it'd be a travesty, as I said already, if they weren't, because they are good enough and they are legitimately the 12th best team in the country. You know, so... Yeah, I would nearly hope that the Down Boys go to Chicago and Boston and New York for the summer, because they don't need to be in the Talisman Cup. And, you know, I'd like to see the likes of a Clare or a Leitrim or a Wicklow or a Sligo or a Wexford push on in the Talisman Cup this year and get a different winner there. But look,
there's no point in it being a competition if the best team doesn't want to play in it. But anyway, that's not for now.
Mayo, Matthew, it's a good point. I would nearly save that for next week, so we have more to talk about.
Cool. I'm happy with that.
I think it's a very good point. I'm not sure if the Dubs came away with a win against Loud, would you be putting Dublin into the top five? I don't think we've seen enough from Dublin yet, and Dublin could very well win this game at the weekend. Mm. Like, Mayo, a lot of questions about them after the weekend, but I think they can figure it out. I think Meath can figure it out. I think Donegal will figure it out and will be in a much better position. But there's a lot of football left to be played this summer.
Yeah. 110 off the for Roscommon scoring off the Mayo kickouts, the Harvey Norman stat of the week. Like, I do wonder about kickouts, because if they are a more open contest, if you do win 63% of them or whatever, it's how do you manage the ones you lose? I think fair enough, if you have an intercept that leads to a goal from a short kickout, not much you can do about that. If that happens, that's a carelessness that's going to be punished. But on the longer kickouts, I do wonder if that's something that teams haven't really come to terms with yet. It's like, you've lost possession in a poor enough position. How do you regroup? You know, just like, how do we make sure that there's cover for the contest? You know, if you lose that contest.
Look at it, and every club around the country had these conversations. Ryan McHugh, if you can find his quotes from last year, it stuck with me when he spoke about protecting your zone as a wing back and owning your position on the field. Paul Galvin talking about this in the Examiner pod a couple of weeks ago was so interesting. Like, the manner in which Galvin's brain works with this stuff. He used to watch the strike from the keeper to anticipate which way the ball was going to break. So he would be already positioned himself as the ball is in the air, that if he scuffed it this way, it's going to come back this way. If it's been a looper, a big midfielder is going to get a fist on it, and it's going to go 20 yards back the other way. There's an art to it. Like the screening, there's an art to this stuff as much as there is a bit of piggery to it too. And just to mention, and because they've gone under the radar, but Keith Doyle kicked 2 points the weekend, and Conor Ryan in one of his first championship games for Roscommon. Two young midfielders, both had fabulous games. They were aggressive, they were strong, they were the platform for a lot of it. And I probably mentioned the long kickouts from Carroll and the short kickouts from Henley that were intercepted. But you're right, Mick. The kickouts in the middle, which were broken and won by piggery and breaks. Roscommon were also on top in the breaking ball, 14-6. And that tells a story in itself as well.
Yep, you've Connacht teams 4, 5 and 6 in the power rankings. Roscommon legitimately in the top 5. All those things are noteworthy. Like, cause I think it is, again, legitimate. You have to have your wins at whatever level you're at as a county via your population and so on. So Roscommon, Armagh, Down, the big winners this week in the power rankings. Donegal, Mayo and nobody else really are the big losers.
We might just mention... Leitrim as well, because we gave Wicklow a lot of kudos last week.
Sorry, I don't have my arrows beside Leitrim, so I missed that.
That was my fault.
Leitrim went up a couple of places and deserved it, so even in defeat, but like, long time since Leitrim have run a team like Galway that close in the championship and on the back of beating Sligo as well.
We mentioned Mark Jackson last week, a phenomenal ball striker from Wicklow, who was 0 from 6 from 2-point frees. The phenomenal Barry McNulty, who would get into most inter-county teams in the country, probably all, had a tough day in front of the posts. He's like, I still think a lot of credit has to go to him. I thought he had some big catches in midfield in the second half, kicked a 2-pointer from 60 yards, and he is what this Leitrim team is built on and built around and will be over the next couple of years. But you'd wonder, could they have caught them a little bit more if McNulty had a game that we know he can have in front of the posts? And some of the other Leitrim young fellas, Honeyman, Young Kelly, McLaughlin, they all stood up as well, and it was great to see that. So we'll see what they can do in the Tailteann Cup.
Okay, we've gone along as usual. The Power Rankings on Off the Ball with Harvey Norman, official stats sponsor of the GAA. Matthew, Tommy, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
The Power Rankings on Off the Ball with Harvey Norman, official stats sponsor of the GAA.